This is episode number 47 with Jill Coleman.
Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together.
Hello, my loves, and welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I've got to get this episode ready for you. So even though I'm a little congested right now, as I'm sure you can hear, I'm going to tee this one up for you. I mean, let's be real though. How much do you love sick voice, right? It's so good. It's really one of my favorite things. Sick voice and bedhead. All right. Well, now before we hop in today, if you are tuning in for the first time, I am so grateful that you are. And I really hope that you enjoy today's episode and that you're going to keep tuning in. And if you've been tuning into the podcast for a bit and you're getting value from the show, I would deeply appreciate if you just take a moment to write a review for the show. You know, this really helps to boost the rankings of the podcast so more people can find it and benefit from all the incredible stories, the wisdom, the insights, and practices that my amazing guests share so generously. So if you could take a moment to do that, my big old heart will be wide open with gratitude. Now, I'm super pumped for you to tune in to today's episode because I've got the incredible Jill Coleman on the show, and she shares the other side of the story of infidelity. Now, Jill is the ex-wife and now best friend of Dr. Jade Tita, who was a guest on episode number 37 of this podcast. And in that raw and honest episode, Jade shared his most personal transformation after having an affair while he was still married to Jill, and how that was the catalyst for him to integrate honesty into all facets of his life. Now, Jade is amazing, and it was really beautiful to hear him share the powerful path that he took after his infidelity to discover truthfulness, to develop his personal honor code, and to transform his life into one of honesty and greater depths of kindness and generosity. So if you haven't heard episode number 37, you definitely want to check that one out too. Now, I've got Jill today sharing her side of the story and her own journey towards healing, towards honesty, authenticity, and sustainable relationships. And Jill details her growth when it comes to trust and communication and how you can start utilizing that trust as a tool for sustainable relationships. Now, it may seem hard to bounce back from an intense breach of trust. I mean, I know that was the case for me, you know, but Jill is here to help you realize that despite the hardships, trusting yourself and the other person in relationships, whether they're romantic or not, is one of the most powerful steps you can take toward healing. And negative emotions, triggers, and fears will always crop up, but it's how you handle these flare-ups that matter. And today, Jill is going to show you empowering ways to do this. So to give you a little background on Jill, in addition to launching her personal brand at jillfit.com in 2010, she was also a co-founder of The Metabolic Effect. And her passion lies in the areas of mindset, body, and business, which she does via her flagship program, The Best of You Coaching Club Mentorship, as well as a few signature online programs like the Mindset Makeover, the Food Obsession Bootcamp, and her 52-week exercise program, the Total Training Experience. And Jill's work has been featured in Self Magazine, Family Circle, Shape, Women's Health Magazine, Prevention Magazine, and many online news outlets like Yahoo Health and Livestrong.com. Okay, so some of the things that Jill and I chat about in today's episode are how to develop an awareness of your emotions so that you can self-regulate, the destructive subconscious belief we all hold and how to release it, why you must ask for what you need in relationships, the biggest blocks toward open and sustainable communication, how to remain in your integrity and honesty, the power of trust and truth in any kind of relationship, steps to speak your truth and have your communication be heard, the process of forgiveness, and how to trust yourself again. And as always, a heck of a lot more, because that's how we roll up in here. All right, so I can't wait to hear what you think of this episode with Jill. You know, this topic really hits close to home for me since my old patterns was attracting men who cheated. And I had to really dig into my own self-worth to rewrite my story around relationships and to trust myself again. So if that's your journey too, I really can't wait for you to hear all the insights that Jill has to share today. And make sure you share this episode with your friends and family, because you never know who may need to hear this today. So if you can, hit pause for a second, take a screenshot of this podcast that you're listening to, share it on Instagram and tag me at I am Stephanie Kwong, and I will always, of course, be sure to shout you back. Okay, my loves, here we go with Jill. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast, Jill.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super pumped to be here.
I'm so grateful. I know when you and I have met so many different
years ago.
And then I remember last year, I keep thinking it was like 3 years ago, but it was just last year when we both spoke at Think Better, Live Better.
Yes.
And in your talk, I heard your story.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I'm like, okay, I heard your side. I didn't really think, I guess I totally forgot about it.
Yep.
And then I interviewed Jade on my podcast. And then he shared the depths of what happened in your relationship from his point of view. Mm-hmm. And as I just shared with you before we started rolling, Jade's episode so far has been like one of the most downloaded. And I realize that there's such a deep need that people want to know on how to rise above like the betrayal in relationships and the pain that comes with that, because it can so affect us. Mm-hmm. And so we heard from his perspective. And so I'm so excited to have a follow-up with you. We've been trying to schedule this. So here we are.
Yay.
But I would love to know and actually have you share from, you know, a woman's perspective and also from your experience, what that was like. But if you want to start kind of maybe even like how you guys met and then...
Yeah, so this is such a treat for me, especially because Jade and I are actually writing a book this year about our experience, and it's going to be like part memoir and part like a little bit prescriptive. You know, I mean, if you've listened to his episode, he's very much a teacher, so
yes.
So I have to kind of like pull him back a little bit. I'm like, hey, just like tell the story, you know, like be vulnerable. You don't have to like coach us up on it every second. But he's been great. We certainly we're best of friends now, and we've come out on the other side. You know, this is what I guess about five years later now, where we have just a great mutual respect. Like I see him as someone who's very integrous, whereas I didn't see him that way before. We went through a lot of communication issues for a long time, as one does with something like this. And so, if you listen to his episode, he probably gave a little bit of backstory, but we met when I was fairly young. I was 24 when we met. He was 32. So at that time, he had a lot more life experience than I did. And so he was kind of like a mentor to me. I mean, we were very much on even ground in some realms, but in terms of his life experience, he was definitely a little bit more, I kind of put him up on a pedestal, I think, you know, as like kind of a mentor. And if anyone who knows him, he's like, he's a coach, he's a cheerleader. He's that just like great person who gives you confidence when you don't have it. And so for me, I kind of saw him that way. We end up falling in love and getting married 3 years later. Married for a long time, best friends. Like, you know, I think when you think about betrayal and you think about infidelity, you kind of think, oh, well, it only happens to people who are in a bad marriage, or it's because like they hate each other, or it's because the wife is a nag, or like whatever. And so for us to go through something like that, you know, a lot of people actually came up to us after they found out, after we've been open about the infidelity in the relationship, and they were like, we just had you up on this pedestal. Like you were like an aspirational kind of couple to us. And we, you know, I think on some level we felt that. So I think it surprised both of us that something like this could happen into a relationship that was so strong, or at least what we perceived, both of us perceived actually to be really strong. And so, yeah, we were building our businesses, my business at Jill Fit and his at Metabolic Effect, and we were just like loving it, but we were spending a lot of time together. And I think looking back, that was probably a little bit of a mistake where we were just like literally living together, working together, traveling together, like doing everything together. And we loved it, but at the same time, I don't think it leaves enough breathing room to have your own experiences and have your own life and be independent, things like that. So there's I think it's multifactorial, like how does an affair happen, or like how does that start? And for us, it was just a small kind of like crack in our communication, I think. And our situation was a little bit different. I think for some people who find out that their significant other is having an affair, they catch them in the act or like something like that. For us, it wasn't that way. Actually, the affair had been over for about 18 months when Jade actually confessed everything to me. So it's not like I found out about it. Like I didn't catch him in the act. It wasn't anything like that. He was actually going through, and I'm sure he shared on the podcast that he fell in love with this other woman, and by the way, didn't treat me any differently. And I think that was what was confusing, or can be confusing to people, is like, what were the red flags? And there really weren't any. And I think that's why for someone who is, quote, like, I guess the victim in this scenario, which I don't really see myself that way, but culturally, I think you'd position me as the victim. It's like, you know, I should have seen like warning signs or anything like that. And it was confusing that I really didn't. And so, he was in heartbreak with the other woman. She actually moved on to someone else, and he was going through his own breakup, and I didn't know any of this. So that was what was really confusing. I thought he was having a midlife crisis. Like I literally was like, this dude is like snapping at me all the time. And like, he was just angry, you know, going through, and I didn't know what was going on. And then, so one night he kind of found himself actually like driving around town and following this woman around town, and he came home and he was shaking. And I was like, what is wrong with you? Are you okay? Like, what's going on? I was actually sleeping at the time. And I got into bed and he just confessed everything, like just couldn't like hold it in anymore, and kind of shared with me everything that had been going on. And at that point I was just outside of my body. Like, is this my life right now? Like kind of up on the ceiling, looking down and going like, okay, what does this mean? And kind of in shock. And then, at that point, of course, everything hit the next day, and then, you know, but we wanted to stay together. And so we tried to work on it for about a year, until nothing was really changing. And so, I mean, I think it's one of those things where you want to pinpoint it. You want to be like, he's an asshole, or she's a nagging wife, or, and it just wasn't like that for us. It was just like something that happened, and trying to make sense of it was tough. And it took a lot of communication and stumbling through those conversations to figure that out.
Yeah. It's interesting because one of the things that he shared was that he had certain needs, and he was like, she just wasn't meeting them, but he also wasn't communicating. So there's this whole expectation, unspoken expectation. And then when the person's not meeting it, now it's their fault. And that is a big issue. I think even just for people in general in relationships, period, even in friendships, it's like we hold these expectations of people and then take
to me, just the cue is resentment, right? So if you're starting to feel resentment towards somebody, I always say that resentment is a cue that you're not getting your needs met, and only you can meet your needs. So it's like, cool, if I'm feeling resentful towards someone, it's probably because I haven't communicated a need, or there's a boundary that I'm not holding firm enough. And so it's ironic and kind of cruel that you learn all of this stuff after the fact, but these are all the things that we started that learned about each other and also about relationships in general as a result of going through this. I don't think we would ever had those conversations otherwise. You know, I think a lot of people don't communicate. So for us, the biggest thing was definitely communication. And that sounds so cliche because everyone says like, oh, communication is important. And it's like, you don't know what you don't know. So I had to go through a big like forgiveness process with myself, going like, you know, because he said the same thing to me, like, you know, you were younger and I felt like I was kind of a dad to you and also a husband to you and like a lot of these things. And I, you know, I beat myself up about that stuff. Like, how did I cause this? Was I not, you know, fit enough? Was it, did I let myself get sloppy? Like just all the kind of like superficial things that you go to first to like kind of blame yourself and you want to pinpoint it. And it's not any of that stuff.
No, and isn't it interesting how we look to ourselves first?
Totally.
Like, I'm the one that did something wrong, which is why this happened.
Right, because you just want to make sense of it. How could this have happened right under my nose for such a long time? And I think that's where a lot of shame comes in too, because people just go, well, like there was no signs, and you're like, there weren't. And it went on for 2 years. And so I think you can, if you want to, if you decide to, you can really beat yourself up about it. Mm. And I certainly went through that phase for sure.
So when you said that you had to go through a lot of forgiveness, what did that look like for you?
Yeah, it was really interesting. So I don't know if you remember this. You and I actually met like within my first 6 months out here. So I moved out to...
at Alexis Wolfer's.
And we had a conversation and I was really struggling with cutting him off. And you actually told me, and I couldn't hear it at the time, but you were like, you need to cut him off. Like, I think you need, you know what you need to do. And it was like, of course, just when you're so emotionally attached to somebody. So anyway, I had found out about it. And then we, like I said, we stayed together for another year and we're just kind of like tripping over ourselves. Like trying to communicate. We're trying to be honest with each other, but he didn't want to hurt my feelings. And I was super sensitive about like, you know, just all of the kind of details and things, like everything that had gone on. And we really didn't know how to talk about that, but we kept coming back to the conversation. And I started traveling a lot by myself. I was like, you know what, this thing over here is not solid. And I feel scared that like all of my eggs are in this basket. So I'm going to go and like try and see if I can be like an independent woman and really do my own thing. So I was in Italy for 3 weeks by myself. I moved to Sydney for a month by myself. I was in Paris for 5 weeks. Like I just went. It was terrifying, but it also gave me a sense of feeling in my power in a time when I felt really out of my power. And I felt like I was waiting on him to decide that we were going to be together, you know? So I felt at the mercy of him. And then we got back from, we went on a trip with his family to Europe. And we just said, you know what? We're here with everyone. Let's just have fun. Let's not talk about our relationship. Let's try and like, you know, be good friends like we've always been. And we had a great time. And then once we got back from that, we just had a series of conversations over about a week. And I gleaned that nothing was changing. He was still really caught up with the other woman. Even though she was totally moved on, he was still really heartbroken. He wasn't emotionally available to be and do the work that we need to do in our relationship. So I left. And the first 6 months out in LA, within a week, I got a lease in Santa Monica, packed up all my shit, drove across country, like just knew no one here. It was really lonely. But the first 6 months, I was so angry. I was like, you put me in this situation. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have to be out here, like, and endure all of this discomfort and uncertainty that I was enduring. And so, I was resentful and really hurt and just venting to my girlfriends. And of course they were amazing. They were on my team and stuff like that. But that wasn't like what I needed really. Yeah. You know, like you want the solidarity, but at the same time, it doesn't make you feel in your power, if that makes any sense.
Yep.
So I went to, I don't know if you're familiar with Byron Katie's work.
Yes.
Yeah. So I went to the New Year's cleanse that year. So I moved out in July and then New Year's cleanse. It was a 4-day event here in LA. And she has something called Judge Your Neighbor Worksheet, where you like fill out this worksheet and you just like judge the heck out of the person that you're having an issue with. And then you question those thoughts. So I wrote down, and I actually got really physically like ill during the 4 days because I was just like emotionally just like overwhelmed with stuff. I actually couldn't even make it to the last 2 days. But the worksheet was like, Jade is an adolescent. He's stubborn. He is self-righteous. Like all of these kind of things, right? Like judge it. And then you question it. And I remember I had this moment where I was reading back all the statements that I had made about Jade. And I was like, this is me. Like I'm these things. Like I'm being self-righteous. I'm being stubborn. I'm being, and I was just like, I don't want to feel this way anymore. And I had this just, it was a light bulb moment where I was like, I have been so angry. I don't want to feel this way anymore. And that was it. I just literally flipped the switch and just like put my ego aside and was like, I'm ready to move on. Totally started, and I started treating him differently. And I started giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I started like catching myself when I was going back into the resentful thoughts. And I was like, how do I actually want to live moving forward? And that's when we started really repairing our friendship.
Wow. Jill, that is so powerful. And I really love, like, a lot of times when I have conflict with people, there's a trigger, but then the first thing I always call my girlfriends. And there's like a select few that I really go to and I say, what is my participation in this? Like how am I showing up or what am I doing to have created this? And I love that you were actually even looking at how am I creating this anger within? Like it wasn't Jade doing it necessarily. Of course, there were actions that he had that maybe weren't aligned for you and felt hurtful, but that you really dove into it, which is so beautiful. And I just want to circle back to this because I'm like, oh my gosh, when I told you, you got to leave him. I think at that time, cause that was probably like 5 years ago, right? It was a long time ago.
Yeah. It was 2015.
Whoa.
It was right after I moved out here. Woo. Like
the first couple and months. I had and as I was prepping for your episode, I was thinking just about this topic in general. And I had very black and white thinking about cheating back then, because my old habit of men that I attracted because of my own belief systems was men who cheated. Mm-hmm. So of course I was like, no,
that's a no.
That's a definite no. Yeah. Hardcore, no questions. Yeah. And one of my best friends, her husband cheated, now they're about to have a baby and they have the most incredible relationship. And then I hear your story and I realize that there's not always, I'm not saying like, oh, they cheat, you can just heal and be best friends, but that there is a beautiful gray there. What allowed you to want to welcome the gray in?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you know, it's such a good conversation to have, because if you're listening to this and you're going like, well, my spouse cheated or whatever. So the cultural narrative is, you know, your partner cheats, you leave. Like, that's it, right? Like, yeah. And especially for, you know, like people like us, like, and I'm not saying there aren't, but like, I'm a strong ass woman. Like, I just am.
You are.
So it's like, so there's a lot of shame around identifying as a strong woman and then staying. You're like, does this make me a pushover? Am I a doormat? Am I losing my respect for myself? Like, there, I had all of those things and I didn't tell anyone about it. I felt so much shame because culturally the script was you have to leave, right? Like, it's just like, it's a no. Yep. And even when I talk to people now, because we talk about this a lot on the Best Life podcast, you know, we'll interview people and they'll say like, if I ever found out my spouse was cheating, I'd leave. And I'm like, you know, there's a lot more considerations than you think there are, because we built a life together. Like, you know, and you're going, and it wasn't like it was so contrary. I caught him in the act and like he wanted to stay. Whereas Danny J, who's my co-host, her husband wanted to be with the other woman. So she didn't really have any choices, right? Mm-hmm. So she left very quickly after. And so it just depends on the circumstance. So I would never advocate that someone leave, and I would never advocate that they stay. Here's one really interesting thing is now, if I found out that the person I was with someone else, I would leave, but not because that's what a strong woman does. I would leave because I have a different relationship to honesty and integrity now than I ever did. So while I can more understand why someone cheats now, like back when I found out about Jade, I mean, I was like, there's no reason why anyone would cheat. I just couldn't even comprehend why someone would cheat. Now I actually do understand it. I'm like, I can see it from all angles. I don't condone the behavior. I think it's still cowardly. And I think, you know, to me, it's a little bit soft. I think you can have like more conversations and do the hard work, but I would leave now only because I'm not in the business of like raising an adolescent. Like, I already feel like I did that. You know, I feel like I like raised myself and I raised Jade and like, I'm at a different level now. So it's not that I actually completely understand why people do it, but I just, my tolerance for it or that level of confusion or being out of your integrity, I have very little tolerance for that now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still with you on that. I think for me, it's still a no, but I think that there's if it's personal, but there's still the ability to
have a conversation.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then look at where you guys are now, like your best friends and how supportive of each other that you really are in your own careers and your life and all that stuff that you could have missed out on a extraordinary friendship.
Yeah, there was a period of time. So after the Byron Katie thing happened, I was ready to like allow him access again, because I think I was very much like, you have no access, there are consequences. Like, it was very like, I need to do this to be in my power. So he actually moved to LA 8 months after I moved out here. And he lived down the street, like literally 10 blocks down the street. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, this is my place now, you're here. And so it was fine. It was easy and it was comfortable because we knew each other. He was still had this person over here, still attached a little bit to the other woman. And so I was still frustrated, but I wasn't angry anymore. I was trying to comprehend. I was trying to like be, that's where we had a lot of conversations for like 6 months straight about like what happened. I wasn't as emotionally attached anymore. So I could sustain a conversation without like running off and like being really upset. Right. So we were able to communicate, you know, a little bit butthurt here and there, but we were able to start to understand each other's perspectives more. Mm-hmm. And that took about 6 months. That was the kind of second iteration where I'm not as emotionally attached. We're communicating better. We're understanding each other's perspectives, learning a lot about each other, but no romantic kind of anything at that point. But what happened was I was trying to move on romantically to being open to other people, and I just couldn't because I was still attached to him. Like, we were still talking, we're still hanging out, we're still doing. And so I was like, I do have to cut this off, actually. Not because I'm like trying to punish you, like it has nothing to do with that. It's just literally like romantically, I'm unavailable for new men because I'm still here. And it was tough, like, cause it was comfortable. So he was upset. And then that's when he went through his like little like butthurt, like couple months where he didn't have access to me and was kind of, you know, he would even share that he was, you know, he'd like lash out at me and he just wanted what he wanted. But it was during that time that I started dating again. And once I started really being able to, and that was about a year after I moved out here, and I started seeing like, wow, there's a lot of different types of people. Like I'd been with this person since I was 24, it's like 10 years, 11 years.
So young.
Yeah. And so you just go, oh, there's like, wow, there's a whole bunch of other people out here and I'm going to have this experience. I hadn't been single since I was 18. So that's like a totally different ball game. And so I think it took us probably another year to fully like detach romantically, and move on to other people and not feel like that was super threatening. Mm-hmm.
Did you feel any of your like old triggers of trust come up when you were with other men? Did you notice that you're being different with them to try to protect yourself, especially after the experience that you just went through?
Yeah, for sure. 100%. So it's interesting because I had obviously done a lot of work on myself and I had talked through a lot of things and I had done a lot of journaling and I had done like a lot of self work. And so if you would ask me, will you trust men again? I'd be like, of course. Like, of course I will. Like, that's what it takes. I got to be vulnerable with someone again. I know it's going to be tough, but I'm aware. Like, I'm an aware person. And then it happens. And then you're like, oh shit. Like, I can have all the awareness in the world, but like, what do I actually do when the rubber meets the road? Like, when I have an opportunity to trust, do I do it? And so it wasn't until I've been in a relationship now for like 9 or 10 months, and it wasn't until this person that I've actually like had to try it out. Because before I was just like, I'm dating here and there and nothing exclusive or anything. And so that was kind of fun, and I never really had an issue with that. It's only been in this recent relationship that like, literally it's like, okay, Jill, do you practice what you preach? Can you like walk your walk? And it is fucking terrifying. Like, I mean, it's getting way better now. Like, it's way better now. But the first like 3 to 4 months when we were like in the like falling in love process, it was like, yeah. Cause he had been single for like, he was like, well, like social media is a different element too. You know, I think that kind of throws, you're like, who's this person and who's that person? Like, you have all these questions. And every time that I got that kind of insecurity trigger or that like emotional hit of like, I want to know who that is. I want to ask questions. I want to be like, whatever. I just was like, what does it actually matter? Like, I think for me, it was like, I don't want to be miserable. I'm going to take him at his word and I'm not going to ask him all the time. Like, cause to me, it's death by 1,000 paper cuts. If I say that I trust him, then I'm going to trust him. And he's never given me any reason not to trust him. So yeah, I mean, could I get my heart absolutely ripped out of my chest at some point? 100%. But I'm willing to, knowing that full well, I didn't know that with Jade. Like, I was like, oh, we're gonna be together to the end of time. Like, there was no alternative. With this one, I'm very aware, or with any subsequent relationship, I'm very aware that that's a very real possibility. In fact, that's probably more possible than the opposite. But I'm going in 100% vulnerable and giving myself over to the process. And it's been extremely scary, but it's been extremely just fulfilling and thrilling, to be honest. Ooh. I mean, I'm in the shit like every day, but I'm doing it.
I feel you. It's like when you, you know, logically we get that. And then subconsciously when we have those, like the
all men cheat or
and then it like triggers in you, and sometimes it's like, well, it just feels better and safer to keep my heart closed, but we know that that's not what we want. And so it's like, are you willing to keep it open even when it feels fucking scary?
It's so scary. But you know, that's the thing, is like, that is the most integrous thing to me. It's like, cool, I can have all the awareness, and of course I'll trust men again. Of course it's all, you know, not all men cheat, blah, blah. Like, I know that I have that. And that's like 90% of it, right? It's like getting your mind right. But that 10% is going, okay, in the moment when you can choose to trust or not, do you? You know? And so for me, my practice has just been going, okay, this is like a trigger that like, so I'm like being triggered here. What's the choice that I want to make for my own sense of well-being, my own sense of inner peace? And I just don't want to have to be hyper-vigilant all the time. I don't want to be questioning all the time. I don't want to have that type of relationship. I might as well, I'd rather be single.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I love that because what I'm hearing you say, Jill, which is so good, is like, you're choosing that because that's what you deserve, right? Is to feel at peace and also that feeling of trust versus distrust is radically different.
Totally.
And you get to choose that. And yeah, even by trusting you, someone could still betray it, but it's up to you to choose what you want to feel in the moment. And it's way freaking more self-loving to say, I'm going to trust, keep my heart open because that feels way better than to shut it down. And also, something you said that I love, or I'm insinuating what it was, is that not everyone is the same.
No.
And you can't bring your past baggage from another relationship and throw it onto another human in front of you because they did nothing.
Yep.
And so all you can do is just to trust them to start.
I think you also, you know, I think that when I was married, because I didn't have the experience or didn't have the wisdom or didn't have whatever, like the awareness, I couldn't if you had said to me, like, you know, the possibility to be single or to be alone, like, I just couldn't have even comprehended that. Like, that would have been like, I can't even think about that because that would be the most awful. But then you go through it and you have your heart ripped out. And now I go, I already feel like I've been through the battle. I know what that looks like. I know that I can handle it. I don't want it. And I'm certainly going to work to not experience that. But I trust myself to handle literally like any emotional trauma that comes up. To me, it's like, cool, that's part of the deal. So I don't think I had that awareness before. I think now I'm like, okay, like I don't want that. And in fact, I'm actively trying to prevent that. But at the same time, I know I can handle it. Mm.
What's the line that you see for people in whether they work it out or they just let it go?
Such a hard question, you know, and it's one I'm super reluctant to answer with any sort of prescriptive anything, because everyone's situation is so different. So Danny and I did an episode on The Best Life, and it was the second episode we did for the podcast, and it was called The Affairs, and we basically told the story of each of our husbands having their affairs, and they were very different, and both of us left. And we got a lot of listeners saying that they wished that we had on someone who stayed. And so we actually did have a guest on later who stayed, and we were able to ask those questions. And so I think that sometimes it can be misconstrued that like my vote is to leave, and that's not actually it. I'd actually have preferred to stay if I could have. I didn't feel like it was an option. And it's hard because I think you have a lot of people who have been married 30, 40, 50 years and they're like, you just stick it out. And I'm like, that's valid for you, but I'm not a martyr. Like I'm not going to be a martyr. I won't be a martyr. Like for me, it's like, I'm not going to sit around and wait to be chosen. And that's how I kind of felt. I was getting to that point in the marriage where I was sitting around waiting to be chosen. And so I think it just depends on where the other person is emotionally. Like I was like, let's work on it. Let's go to counseling. Let's do all the things. And Jade was somewhat responsive to that, but he was still so, and he would say this too, he's still so distracted by the other thing that was going on. And so similar to Danny's husband, like, what do you do? You're not you can't be a martyr. I mean, I guess you could be, but like, you're not going to sit around while your husband is actively trying to be with someone else. Or you can, if you're cool with that, and maybe you just have a different conversation. Maybe you're like, cool, let's talk about having an open marriage. So there's a lot of different iterations. I know for me, I want exclusivity. So I think that there's a lot of different ways. So I'm reluctant to answer that question. I think it really depends. But I can tell you, when I left the marriage, it wasn't because I wanted to be chaste. I think sometimes people go, well, like, you know, see how you do without me, right? Like, it wasn't about that. For me, it was for me. It wasn't for like to see if you would chase me. It wasn't to like see how you could fend without me. Totally. And I think sometimes we have this kind of very like responsive, like kind of bomb dropping, like, I'm going to do this and see how you can, like, it wasn't that. I knew it wasn't. And I knew you have to leave for the right reasons.
It's
it's heavy.
It's such a tough decision. And you're right. Yeah. It depends on each situation for each person. How does self-respect fall in line with that then?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the hardest things, is because you have to ask yourself, and like, you know, you have to just really be aware of your emotions, which is hard. I love this process because it got me so aware of my emotions, like literally noticing and naming your emotions is a lot of things that people, so there's two parts to it. There's knowing how you feel, and then there's actually being able to speak how you feel to the other person, right? So Jade and I, we hadn't really practiced that. And so going through this perspective, I was able to articulate the exact emotion. If I was getting triggered, it wasn't like I just lashed out. I was saying like, okay, I'm being triggered because I'm feeling like a lot of shame around this, or I'm feeling not good enough, or I'm feeling like embarrassed, or I was able to like actually speak the words. And so I think the communication piece is like kind of that first step. And being able to kind of say out loud and then come to terms with it. I think a lot of times people do feel a lot of shame around this stuff because they can't verbalize it. And it feels really scary to even admit, like, my husband could cheat on me. And like, there's just a lot of shame around that. It took me about a year and a half to even be able to like, to really talk about it publicly.
Mm-hmm. How do you start to check in and tell what emotions are coming up, and then the best way to communicate that? Because I think that would be huge for people who are listening to even know how to do that in daily life, period, with all relationships. Yeah. Whether it comes to talking to your parents or talking to your friends, dude, or your children, so, or your whoever, yeah, that can What are some steps, Jill?
Gosh, it's so hard. You know, I mean, I guess the word gets thrown around quite a bit, but it's really, it's being authentic. It's being like, so to me, it's just noticing and naming the emotion without taking into account how it's going to be received. And I think that's what's really hard. So I remember when Jade and I were trying to talk. And I remember literally like words getting caught in my throat, like physically, like coughing, because I like couldn't say the thing, because I was always worried about if I said the thing that what he would do. Would he leave? Would he stay? Would he go have sex with the other woman again? Like, I mean, it was just all these kind of like, I was constantly considering how my words were going to be received. And so the hardest part of communication, I think, is trying to manage the other person's response. And so the best practice is, and it's so, so hard, but honest communication of, okay, I'm feeling this way. If I'm feeling insecure, if I feel like I want to lash out, is it because I'm embarrassed? Is it because I'm confused? Is it because I'm feeling not good enough? I tend to think it's usually that. And then saying it and allowing for the other person to have whatever response that they're going to have and endure it. It's like so hard. So I use the three S's of honesty. So it's really, really hard. It's like set the stage. So first thing is set the stage. And that's like you saying like, okay, I want to talk to you about something. And I'm like really worried about how you're going to respond. So I think sometimes when you preface it with like, this is going to be a hard conversation we need to have, or I'm feeling really vulnerable right now. So we can set the stage first. Mm-hmm. Then you say the thing. So the second S is like, just say it, right? As clearly as you can communicate it without considerations. And that alone is a practice. And then the third S is stick it out. So it's like, cool, let the chips fall. And so if you're struggling to have a conversation with your parents or a coworker or sibling or best friend, or like, it is doing them a disservice. In fact, it's manipulation if you try to control how they're going to respond. So you just like allow for them to have the full experience. If they get angry, they get angry. If they get, and trust yourself to handle it, right? They're disappointed. They, you know, they leave you. Like, I mean, there's a lot of different outcomes that are really scary. And so I think the biggest block for us to be able to communicate honestly is trying to manage that other person's response. But honestly, it's like ripping a band-aid off. Having an honest conversation with someone, it hurts at first and it's painful, but on the other side, it's like this ease and this liberation, and like you just operate that way. And so I'll never not be honest in my relationship. So I think sometimes the guy I'm seeing right now, sometimes will get like a little bit, it's a little jarring, but it's not bomb dropping honesty. It's not like, see if you can handle my honesty. It's like, hey, I'm just like, I'm going to be matter of fact with you. And like, because I want you to have all the information, because I love you. I want you to have all the information. I want you to be totally included in what's going on in my head. Do with it what you will. And that takes a level of self-trust that's kind of hard.
Yeah, I love that. And that's like, so again, self-honoring, where it's like, I get to actually speak my truth, because how many people do I know? And I'm sure you know, Jill, who stuff their voice down.
Because of course, I did for once, forever. Yeah,
me too. And as I've spoken up, I notice that it's not always well received. However, it's the most important thing I think we all
can do. To me, it's a service. Like, honesty is such a service. And, you know, they, like, for me, the most hurtful thing about the affair wasn't like the physical act, like whatever. For me, it was the exclusion. Like, it was not being given all the information and feeling as though my choice was taken away from me. Because I think, like, if I had known, like, then I would have the option to leave. And so, to stay or to do something. And so, the exclusion is really the biggest hurt. Is not having all the information. And so now I will never do that to someone I'm with. Like if I'm thinking something or I'm feeling a certain way, like they're going to know. And I'm not blaming them. I'm just, and I always preface this with the guy I'm dating now. I'm like, hey, this isn't like, I don't want you to take this on. You're not doing anything wrong, but I'm feeling this way right now. And it's not, I don't want you to change anything, but like, that's why I'm kind of feeling the way I'm feeling. And like, he's like cool with it. He's just like, okay, so it has nothing to do with me. I'm like, nope. Like, you're the trigger, but don't take it on. He never gets defensive. Like, so we can just communicate with it being kind of more matter of fact. And it's a practice.
That is so good. And I love how you said first, set the stage.
Set the stage.
Don't just let it rip, because all of a sudden they'll be like, what the heck just came flying at me, right? But you're like, okay, I need to like actually share something with you, or this is on my heart. Or even if you say like, this is really hard for me to say, if you're just starting out.
It gets them on your team, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I think sometimes we don't communicate until we're at the breaking point. And then all of a sudden that's like the worst time to like,
and then it comes
years
out.
Of stuff coming up, you know?
It explodes and spews everywhere. And they're like, what did I just walk into?
Yeah. But so now, wait till there's like an emotionally like neutral emotional moment. And then I think when you break the ice that way, they're much more likely to be able to hear what you have to say without like taking it personally and getting super defensive. And like, cause then you just can't. And that's how Jade and I, we were just communicating. We were super defensive, super sensitive. Like one person would leave, one person would come back. Like it was just, it was really hard for a while, but we both kept showing back up to the conversation. That's why we got better.
I love this. So let's say someone does speak, they do all three S's, and the experience that the person they just told was explosion. Yep. They start to go into judgment, defensiveness. Sure. Sure. How do you hold your ground, and what would you do after that to mm-hmm. stay in your mm-hmm. integrity of your honesty and in, you know, in your own self-respect?
I think one thing to remember is that when you speak the truth, it's your truth. It's not necessarily their truth. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes what I've seen as people are starting to learn how to communicate honestly, a lot of my clients are kind of working through some of this stuff, is that they assume the other person will immediately see it the way they see it. And they'll agree on the
don't
truth.
Don't they? They should.
I know, it's like, let's agree on my truth. It's like, no, that's not how it works, right? Like they are entitled to their experience as well.
Right.
And they're entitled just as much to their experience as well. Even if you're like, that's how you see things. Like we don't like, so I think if the goal is to agree, then you're already losing. I think the goal should be to be able to see it from their perspective. You're probably never going to agree. I might be like, hey, you know, this is how I'm seeing it. This is where I'm at. And the other person might be like, I see it the exact opposite way. Who's right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think either person is necessarily right. I just think the question becomes, can I put myself in their shoes and go, and this is a question that I ask my boyfriend all the time. I'm like, could you see it? And he says to me too, can you see, could you see that the way I see it? Or can you see how I came to that conclusion? I'm like, absolutely.
Yep.
That wasn't my intention, but I totally get how you could see it that way.
Yep.
You know? And so I think that's really, the goal is just the communication piece and the empathy. It's not to agree. And so I think if someone has a poor response, I think you need to allow them to have it. And that's what's really scary, because we take that person like, oh my God, I did something wrong, or like, you know, I'm a bad person or whatever. And it's like, no, like the best, the biggest service you can provide them is all the information. And then also give them the benefit that they can handle it.
Yes. Yes. Like, and you already said that earlier too. It's like, trust that they can do what they need to do with the information. I feel like I just need to throw this in here as a thing on even asking for what you need, right? Because I think oftentimes we don't want to ask what we need because we've already made the decision that they're no, or whatever their reaction might be. And I remember one time, this is when I was first starting out as a coach, and I was working with, I reached out to some guy who was in my Tony Robbins group and asked him for some support. He supported me. And then at the end of the conversation, I was like, never mind. And he goes, what? And I went, nothing. It's no big deal. And he goes, Stephanie, just ask me. And then I said, hey, well, would it be okay if in the future I needed more support, I could reach out? And he's like, the answer is yes. And he goes, please do not try, or please trust that I'm an adult enough to make my own decisions and I can say yes or no. Don't make my decisions for me. And I went, oh shit. Like, it's the same thing. It's like,
totally.
Trust that they have the ability to say yes or no, but stop making decisions for people too.
Totally. And I agree with that so much. And you know, it's hard because you look back at my relationship with Jade, and I think because he wasn't really communicating his needs, that's what I'm worried about happening again. So I'm like, I don't know that I fully trust, or I mean, in theory I do, but like, I think I would be hesitant to ask because I'm like, I don't trust that they're not going to do it out of obligation, or that they're gonna do it to keep the peace or whatever. But to your point, I want my practice to be allowing the other person to do whatever. And then me, if they end up like Jade did, resentful and whatever, that like I can handle that too. So yes, asking, and it's been really refreshing to be in this new relationship. This is the first person I've really like let take care of me in a really long time in some capacities. And like, I've been pleasantly surprised at like, I've like offered feedback and like, he's done it with no issue. And I'm like, that was easy. Like, I mean, you know, and it's like, it's so surprising. Cause I'm like, I agree. I think sometimes we already assume that they can't do it, or they're gonna be mad about it, or they're gonna be inconvenienced, or whatever it is. And like, it is so refreshing to just be like, and I also know that if he's doing those things out of obligation or guilt or whatever, that's not my problem. It's not my business to manage.
Mm-hmm. I love, there's so much of like the, you take care of you, and let them take care of them and not take on their stuff either as your own.
And it's so hard because you are connected, you're emotionally connected. So you want to take care of them too. And you want to consider them and, you know, you want to make sure you're making the right choices. And honestly, through all of this, the only thing that I really know for sure is that like everyone needs to just have their own experience and have the full experience. And like, we need to just let the chips fall and figure that out.
Yeah. But I think a lot of people are so scared of that because what's underneath that is a fear of a loss of love, right? Like if I upset them or if they don't like what I said or whatever, it's like, oh no, I don't want to lose their love in any way. So let me just hold it in and cut myself with 1,000 paper cuts, right? Instead of speaking it out and then knowing that whether they love you or not, that's not the point. Yeah. You got to love yourself first enough.
It is. It's, you know, and I noticed some of those, like those unlovable kind of sensitivities were coming up for me at the beginning of this new relationship. Like I was always defaulting to like, why would you be with me? And like just those kind of, you know, subconscious things. And then I talked it out with Dani and she was like, you know what? You need to put like a reminder or something on your phone. And I actually have this reminder. It goes off every day on my phone at 3 o'clock. It says, you're worthy to be loved and you don't have to be scared. And that was like, I know. And I started putting like, you know, like last July, like when I was starting to feel like really, okay, this is like actually getting serious now. Like we're catching feelings. Okay. This is the first time this has happened since my marriage. And so it was going off and I think it like really did help. It goes off every day at 3. So
I love it. I know you guys, Jill just picked up her phone
and read it.
And it's so true. And other things, you're worthy to speak your truth and you won't lose love, you know, or you don't have to be scared, whatever that might be. That's so powerful. How do you think though, let's just say, I mean, I get that we get to let other people have their experience and be responsible. We get to have our experience and be responsible for our own reactions and actions. But how do you think in relationship we could also maybe support our partners to be able to express themselves and their needs?
Yeah. It's such a great question, gosh. And it's such a practice. Because I do think it takes a level of self-awareness to not, I think the most selfish thing that anyone can do in a relationship is make it about them. So for example, if like my partner comes to me and is like, you know, wants to talk about something or share something, even in like a heated moment, share something that is his truth. My response matters in that moment. So because my response is either going to affirm or negate his ability to do that in the future. So like I have to be extremely aware of my own response. So if I'm getting internally, if I'm getting like an emotional trigger, like a hijack moment of like, I'm taking it on, I'm taking it personally, I want to get defensive. I try and breathe into it and I just go, okay, cool. Like even if it makes me feel triggered, like I did something wrong or I'm not being a good partner or whatever, I need to be able to hold space for him and like hold it down and let him speak his truth. And then like, we can have a conversation. So like, it's not my time yet. So if he's like, if he wants to share something or whatever, my response really matters. Cause in that moment, I'm very aware that I'm either going to affirm or negate what he decides to do moving forward. And so it doesn't mean like, don't honor your feelings, right? Like your response is always valid if you're feeling insecure, but I know for me, it's insecurity more than anything else. And he can't help me with that, right? Like he can't be like, you're amazing. You're amazing. Like if I feel insecure inside, like no matter how many times he tells me he loves me, whatever that I just can't feel that. So I think the way that you can affirm honest communication moving forward is trying to not take it on when your partner, friend, spouse, whatever, like comes to you in a moment of vulnerability. I think it's important that you hold it down. And that's my practice. Even though I'm human, I get that emotional hijack of like, I did something wrong and I want to cry and like whatever, but I just try and see it from his perspective.
Yeah, because the more you can emotionally regulate yourself, the safer they'll feel to say things to you
in the future. And I hope that I can hold that space and not take it personally. And I do think it is selfish to make it about you, frankly.
So I know that the Byron Katie exercise was so powerful for you. And do you remember the questions? Because I would love, I know that in the work, I'm like,
yeah, there's the four right questions.
There's the four questions. Was that similar or was the judge your neighbor?
Judge it was neighbors, just like judge them. So you actually judge them. She's like, as she goes, don't try and be nice. Don't try. She goes, judge them as harshly as possible. And then use the four questions to question the statements. So if I say,
is it true?
Jade is, yep. And so it's, is it true? Can you absolutely be sure that it's true? And then it's like, how would you feel if you didn't have this thought? And so like for me, that was really what it came down to. So one of the things that she says that I absolutely love is who hurt you more, the person, or who's more, what's this? Like, it's like, who's more, I forget the word, but it's like the person who wronged you once or you for reliving it in your head a million times. And it's like, ooh. Yeah. And I was like, who's more hurtful? The person for hurting you once or you for reliving it in your head a million times. And that was where I was at. Like, you know, Jade and I weren't really talking. He was back in North Carolina. He was living his life. I was the one sitting and stewing in resentment and pain and hurt and all this kind of stuff. And I had to like swallow my pride because, I mean, I think culturally we go, so long as I can maintain my anger, he's paying. Like, so long as I can like maintain my level of self-righteousness, it feels like I'm not letting him off the hook. And it almost feels like a betrayal of myself to give up my anger. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah. That's why people struggle to forgive.
Because like, it feels like if I, right. Yeah. I'm condoning the behavior. And it's not that. And so nope. That I really had to have that experience. So yeah, is it true? Is it not true? And so for me, I got to the point where she does something called the turnaround, mm-hmm. which is when you can turn it back either on yourself or in mm-hmm. a different way. So for example, if the statement is Jade is self-righteous, I can say I am self-righteous or Jade is not self-righteous. And then you ask yourself if those statements are true. So the turnaround was I am self-righteous. And I was like, holy shit, that's true. Like for the last 6 months, I've been so fucking angry, like, and so self-righteous and so mad at him. And he doesn't give a shit. Like, what am I doing? Like, literally, what am I doing? And so I had to have that moment. And, you know, I think for different, but it took me a year and a half, you know, I mean, I think, yes, to a certain degree, you choose your response, you choose your emotions, you know, you choose happiness, all those kind of things. And I think that's a very like new age kind of a thing of like, you can just make a choice and then you're just move on. It's like, no, you spent 10 years with this person. So like your feelings are valid, your feelings of pain and hurt and whatever, but at some point it's time to move on.
Yeah.
And I think that's different for everybody. Some people can move on after weeks, months. It took me about a year and a half.
Yeah. What else did you do in that time to kind of heal the pain and also move forward?
I allowed myself to feel all the feelings. I think I was, for a time, was kind of scared of that, of like, oh, if I, because I had done like, you know, personal development work ahead of this. So I had the idea of, am I less spiritual? Am I less evolved if I allow myself to be in those like base level emotions of like anger and pain? I mean, I would just call up my girlfriends and I would literally say, do you mind if I'm just like, we call it VC, like being a victim, like victim card. Do you mind if I play my victim card really quick? So can I be VC really quick? And like, yeah, they just held it down for me. But I knew as I was venting and as I was processing and as I was talking shit, frankly, that like, I knew that that was just something that was a base level behavior that I knew that I wouldn't stay in, but I needed to release in some way, shape or form. So I went to a friend of mine, had a retreat during that time, and it felt really self-indulgent to be able to talk, but I was just shitting on him the whole time and it was fine, but it was like, I need to get that out. And then at some point I was like, I don't want to be doing this anymore. Like, I just don't want, this is taking up way too much emotional energy. And like, I don't want to be this person. It's fine for a time, but I just came to a conclusion that. So I think a lot of processing, I think some of us, especially if you're more in like personal development space, you're kind of scared of negative emotions because we're kind of taught like you shouldn't, mm-hmm. you know, like that's not a healthy emotion. To me, it's just a red flag. It's just like, cool. Like it's valid, you
it's
know,
so
anger,
healthy.
Hurt. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And you have to process it in order to move through it.
Yeah. Oh, I've got my sacred anger practices. As long as you're not doing them at someone and you're safely processing them, it's a natural emotion. And a lot of it's trapped too in your system from even the past. If you mm-hmm. are yeah. someone who historically has suppressed anger or sadness or shame and all that, you gotta let it work through you.
It was interesting, you know, watching Jade go through heartbreak when I didn't know what was going on was really interesting because he was very angry. And I remember one time just saying to him, like, why do you feel so done wrong by everybody? Like, he was just lashing out at like his brother and myself and his other brother. And like, and I just, now it makes complete sense because he was in a lot of pain and didn't really know how to like process it, but it was confusing watching from the outside, you know, and it's, like, I think you might have to go, you do have to go through some of that a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's good practice.
Yeah. Wow. What do you see as like other important pillars for relationships to stay healthy, nourishing, and sustainable?
Gah. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I'm still working on this shit myself. You know, I can just tell you from my perspective that you really have to prioritize doing the things that you need to outside of your relationship. I think one of the biggest mistakes that we made or I made was just identifying too strongly with the relationship and going like, okay, this is my husband and I'm a wife. And like, I think that stuff is great and I celebrate it, but also, I think I didn't understand my identity outside of the relationship, especially because this person's older than me and I looked up to them to a certain degree and stuff like that. I won't ever make that mistake again. I won't ever make the mistake of not having things outside of my relationship that give me a sense of meaning and purpose. So my business, my girlfriends, traveling with them, going to conferences, like writing, like things that are outside my relationship. And I find that I'm able to appreciate the relationship a lot more. So the person I'm with now is like the complete opposite of Jade. He's great. He is, but he's like a dude. Like he's just like, you know, like he doesn't really do a lot of personal development work. So I know when we're together, we're going to be laughing our ass off. We're going to have amazing sex. We're going to do adventures. Like I just got back from like 3 weeks of snowboarding. Like we're going to do stuff like that, but we're not going to talk about Byron Katie. And that's cool. Like I just, you know, so I outsource that to my girlfriends or, you know, like, and even Jade, like, you know, he's someone that I go to have those kind of discussions. So I think understanding my kind of social, Jade calls it like your social MVP team, like who you can go to for certain things and not making the mistake of thinking that one person needs to be your everything or trying to be everything to one person. So, you know, my boyfriend's like, you know, wants to be a dude. I'm like, go play basketball for 5 hours. Like, I'm not going to be able to provide that for you.
I can't do that.
Yeah, like go with your boys, go snowboarding for a week. Like I can't provide that. So
yeah,
I'm not making that feel like a threat.
So good, Joe.
So, but no, I'm learning as I go. Believe me, I'm like struggle town through it every moment, but I'm doing it.
Yeah. Well, and I think that the key is like at least staying as consciously aware of it as you can. Ooh, being as honest and integrous as you can and not taking on their shit and not letting your own shit be triggered. And then learning along the way.
Yeah.
You know,
it is. And like, you know, just, and it's okay to have those moments where you just want to, again, call up your girlfriend and be like, hey, can I just vent to you? I'm just gonna be like super like base level right now. Like, and the, just have the awareness that you're doing it and just go, cool. Like I found that I can move on a lot faster if I do that.
Yeah.
And I'm not staying mired in complaining and blaming and stuff like that. I'm just like, cool. I realize this is my own shit, but I also want to get it out, you know? So yeah, I mean, it can be an exhausting process, but you know, sometimes you just go snowboarding and you have amazing sex and then like you laugh a lot and it's fine.
Yeah. You're like, and then we're good. And more amazing sex, please. Yeah. Thank you. Now we're really good.
Yeah. Well, he's 5 years younger than me, so that's also different.
Yeah, girl.
Totally different than than Jade being older. So yeah, I mean, it's been fun. And dating's been fun too. Like, I mean, I definitely did plenty of that over the last several years, so.
That's so good.
Yeah.
All right, Jill, thank you.
I do not consider myself a relationship expert, but definitely have a lot of experience.
Yeah, but I think you've learned a lot from it, and even just what you shared in terms of how you can move through it, rise above it, and moving forward, how things get to be different based off of what you learned and how you took care of yourself.
Yeah, you know, one thing that's, I hope that conveys, or I don't know what Jade said in his interview, but I don't really blame him. Like, I think that's one of the things that like sometimes I don't know if that comes through enough, that I actually don't like really blame him. Like, I don't respect, you know, infidelity, and I think it's cowardly, and I certainly don't condone the behavior, but I also like don't, I mean, I get it. You know what I mean? So I think when you can like get that, I'm not mad at that. I don't have like a hard line in the sand. I think there's a lot of different ways to have relationships, and I see that more now than I ever have. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that like I'm the right one and he's the wrong one, or I'm good and he's bad. Like, it's not like that. It's just more about like, can we have conversations to understand why these things happen? And then what do you want moving forward? And that's really what it is. So I don't blame him. I don't think he did quote anything wrong, to be honest. I think we came to a situation that both of us participated in. I certainly don't blame myself either, but it just is what it is.
Yeah. I think that's so important. That's actually really empowering, because the moment you blame someone else, boom, you're back in, totally. Got your victim card up again.
Yeah. Where do you go from there, right?
Nowhere.
There's no choices.
Yeah, and I love the reaching out and dumping, because that's so important for me. I'm also like a verbal processor. I know some people go straight to their journal and they're like, on the page. I'm like, let me just talk to someone, get it out. And something, the reason why I don't like to repeat it, because I caught this in my mom one time. She was complaining about someone in her life, and which it was notably so. This person was not being good at all. And I just said, is this going to serve you to repeat this story? Because I see your energy when you're sharing it, and it's like you're reliving it right now.
Yeah.
Do you want to have that energy in our time together? If that's what you need, I'm here for you. Or would it serve you to shift the conversation? And she's like, yeah, actually, no, I don't want to waste my time on that. And I think that's great. Cause sometimes we forget and we expend so much of our precious time and energy with other people on.
Cause it feels like it has utility, right? It's like, if I'm venting, like I'm doing something, I'm in my power. Like that's, it feels that way, but you're just spinning your wheels. If you're still having the same conversations like 6 months from now, a year from now, then you got to do something different. And it might be swallowing your pride, and it might be like giving up your ego and like forgiving and things like that, that you've been so hardlined on because you feel like you're giving up your power by doing that. But it's the opposite.
Yeah. But definitely get that vent out if you need to. We're saying don't vent. Do it like
vent and then be like, okay, what's next?
And what can I do about it now?
Totally. Yeah. Love it.
Oh, Jill. I love this so
much. Thank you so much for having me. This is fun. I love talking about this stuff.
And I got a few more questions for you to close this out. What's something unique about you that most people don't know?
I don't know. I think probably because I have a goofy side. I think like a lot of people don't know that because I'm like, I'm very like kind of, I don't know, it's focused and directed, but yeah.
Yeah. I've seen some of that peek out. Like, yeah, I haven't seen that yet, but at your 1 year anniversary party.
Oh yeah.
When I see you and Danny together, I'm like, it's like a comedy show. I love it. Like I can see where all that gets ripped out.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a lot warmer in person than people see me on the internet.
Well, I think you're amazing.
Oh, thank you.
And when you're in a dark place, what's your go-to to get out?
What is my go-to? I mean, honestly, it's probably calling Danny. I mean, like on like you said, you have girlfriends that you go to, like that you can really overanalyze a lot of things. I think if I'm in that dark place, I usually will, you know, reach out to Danny or reach out to my brother, whose also name is Danny, and just be like, hey, can you talk me off the ledge? Like, I'm just going down this place that like I know is not good and it's not productive. Can we like talk this out? Yeah, just reaching out. I'm not a big journaler either, but.
Yeah.
Or reading Byron Katie's work. Like I've read her books like a million times. It just gets my head on straight.
It's so good. And it's, I love logic. And so her process really logically steps you through that.
Yes. I've never been like a huge fan of like Eckhart Tolle's or like anything that it feels a little bit more esoteric. Her stuff is very like steeped in reality, which I really appreciate.
Me too. And knowing what you know now, what advice would you give your 10-year-old self?
My 10-year-old self? You know, I think the advice would be to have to allow yourself to have the full experience and not try to prevent things. I think that's really hard. I think if I have one piece of advice for my younger self, it would be just have the full experience, like allow yourself to do the thing. I've always, people always say like, you know, following your gut. I think I've always followed my gut. I've always kind of like gone where the momentum is. So, you know, falling in love or doing a thing, like I've never really been like a logic person, but I don't talk myself out of things. If like a momentum is going in a certain way, like for example, like I'm like kind of going to move in with my boyfriend and like, it's kind of early and like, I'm kind of like, is this the wrong decision? But I'm also like, I fucking want to, so I'm going to. So I've always just made decisions in my life based on my gut and my heart. And so, yeah, I mean, I think just that would be so good. Yeah.
And where can people connect with you?
Sure. It's just at jillfit.com. If you guys are interested in just reading about some of the content, if you want to get like emails and stuff, you can throw your email in. I email my list usually weekly with some juicy stuff. And then on social media, it's just at jillfit on the socials.
Yeah.
But I would love to hear if you guys have experiences. And obviously, if you want more of this, you can listen to the Best Life podcast. We talk about a lot of this stuff a lot.
Yeah. Check out the podcast. You'll hear Jill and Danny.
That's so funny. It's fun. It's real. It's raw. I mean, this, you know, it's not hard for us to talk about this stuff because we've talked about it up and down, left and right, but it can feel jarring at times to some people because, you know, infidelity is still kind of a taboo subject. And so, like, we always laugh sometimes. It's like, hi, I'm Jill Coleman, and my husband had an affair. Like, it feels very like I just met you, and we're already talking about affairs. And so, but, you know, we just really want to jump right into it because we've worked through it so much, and we're so detached from it that we don't make it, there's no shame or guilt or whatever around it. So, if you are still feeling or you've been on either one of three sides of that situation, feel free to reach out to us. We've heard it all, so.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
This is great. Thank you, Jill. And I love that we get the both sides, Jade and yours, and that both of them are powerfully taking responsibility for your own side in the equation. So thank you so much. I appreciate you.
Thanks so much.
So much goodness with Jill today. And hearing her side of the story and her experience with infidelity was really healing for me. And I hope that there were some bits of wisdom there that you can apply to your life, especially the one of speaking your truth in relationships, even if it might create friction or conflict, and letting the other people process it however they need to. You know, I know so many people, especially women, who shut down their voices for different reasons. But ultimately, it's up to you to have the courage to reclaim your voice and to speak your truth from your heart. I remember hearing Lily Singh share a quote that she saw, and it really landed for me. She said, "Say what you mean, but don't say it mean." You know, it's really all about who you're being and the intention behind what you say that matters. I mean, you can say things that might be tough, but if your intention is clean and you're wrapping it in kindness, even if it's a straight up hard line of truth, then it has a better chance for the other person to hear it and not trigger off. But again, it's up to you to have the courage to reclaim your voice and speak your truth from your heart, no matter what. And a big part of feeling worthy of speaking your truth or feeling like you're enough to be heard is based in self-love. So if you want some support to connect with yourself, to discover and to honor your truth, make sure you go and check out my amazing 40-day self-love transformation online course. You can find out all the details about that course at 40dayselflove.com. That's the number 40dayselflove.com. And for all my listeners, I always give a $50 gift for you. You can use the coupon code LOVE50, all one word, at checkout so that you can save $50 off the entire course. Now, I am so proud of my self-love course, as it's an exact blueprint that shows you how to quiet the self-doubt and self-beat up, and how to turn up the self-love and self-confidence, and ultimately to feel really damn good about yourself because you deserve it. Now, if there's someone that you know who could benefit from this episode, pretty please share it with them. And if you got value from the episode and it feels aligned for you, I would be so grateful if you'd leave me a 5-star review on iTunes, because that means we can support even more people to rise higher together. And if you want to connect with Jill and to learn more about her and her powerful work, all the links to connect with Jill are in the show notes, and that is over at stephaniekwong.com/EP47. And of course, you can check out all my other podcast episodes there too. All right, until next time, you know I'm sending you so much love.